time. But that's also true about the Israelis. You know, many people want to believe, because not only are they tied into a government called Israel, they're also tied into a religion that represents the country Israel. So these people have not only have their spiritual belief system tied to the lies, they also have their patriotic system tied to the lies. And so they're even more deluded as a public than the Americans are, if you can believe it, or than the South Africans are, being wed to the African National Congress as being somebody who really is interested in lifting the South Africans out of poverty. But when you look at the facts on the ground, little has changed in many of the ghettos, and it's been superficial at best, and things are going to just get worse from here on out after this financial mess really takes root. So, you know, I try to see things rationally in my head. I often have to explain my take on things to people because it's hard for them to give up some of these beliefs that they've held so strongly. It's hard. You know, none of us want to first admit to ourselves that we could have been duped. We don't want to say, oh, geez, you know, I got that wrong. I got that so terribly wrong. But then when we have to say that, you know, the very people that are supposed to be representing us are in fact not doing that, and in fact doing something quite different, representing someone else who is opposed to my freedom or opposed to my life, that becomes even more difficult. And then there is a leap of faith that we all need to take once we've come to the truth. Are we willing to risk what we've got to be truthful? And that is the biggest question, because so many people out in this listening audience know the truth, and yet they're too cowardly to stand up. It's all well and good as they're listening on their radio, but will they actually take an action with that truth? Because, ladies and gentlemen, the truth without someone to represent it in a physical sense is just weightless. It holds no sway in this world. You have to be willing to stand up and represent the facts as they are. To say you support Palestine and then to do nothing to support it is exactly what I'm describing now. It's empty. To know that that criminals around our globe are come from a Zionist bent and are destroying the qualities that we all need to have a good life is one thing, but then not to take an action is what most people do. And then you've got a group of people out there that just don't even want to know. Oh, I don't want to know that. It's too disturbing. It's too hard for me to understand. I don't really want to know. And I get this from my family, you know. They don't want to know how bad it is. They don't want to know what's coming for them. They would rather go forward making believe it's going to be just fine. Don't worry, it'll be fine. You know, I had a visitor here from my wife's side of the family, and I told her some of these facts, and she said, I don't want to really know about that. And I said, are you kidding? Don't you want to be prepared for this? Well, no. She didn't want to. She preferred not to know. Now, I don't understand that kind of thinking. I can't get that. But, you know, I'm only one person. I represent one type of person in this world. We've got as many types of people as there are people on this planet, and many people just can't face it. Sad, but true. So what we do when we come across somebody like that is I just stop immediately trying to convince them of anything and move on. And I try to go and speak to somebody and use my breath and my thoughts on somebody who is interested. Interesting fact about the American Revolution, ladies and gentlemen, that originally there were only 5% supporters for the American Revolution. And by the end of the war, it only held sway in 17 to 18% of people actually taking action. And it was successful. You don't need the entire population to change things, but you do need a committed group, a committed core. This is why the Zionists have been so successful. They have always cultivated a committed core of criminals to support their crime gang. And you take a look at the websites for these organizations, these Jewish organizations that raise money. They are on the ground, very active at bringing Zionist criminals into their gang, into their work gang. They've got SIAMs around the world that do things for them free of charge. So, you know, we're not, this is not a surprise that we have to face this stuff with our own public not signing on to the truth. I mean, we're still struggling to get these facts out into the hands of people who need to know it. But it's working. As I said in the last show that I did with Inayat Wadi on Intellectual Challenge, what's happening with our financial system is going to bring people into this truth-searching mode. They're going to be interested in finding out how in the world did we end up in this mess. And many people are going to want answers. How did I lose my pension fund? How did I lose my home? How did I lose my job? How did I lose my food? How did I lose my heat for my home? You know. And when they start searching around for answers to how they lost all this stuff, they're going to come up with the things that I've been describing and discussing here from the beginning. Now, not everybody's going to arrive at my website or arrive at my information. I hope this requires the people out there in the listening audience to take these actions on behalf of the facts. I can't do this on my own. I'm just a guy out here laying out these facts at your feet. Now, whether or not you bend over to pick them up and then spread them as far and wide as they need to be spread is another story. I can't make you do that, and I certainly can't be successful in this fight unless I have your help. And that includes financial help, which, you know, I have to go hat in hand every few weeks to people to help me out. Because I don't have a benefactor. I'm not supported by a corporation. I don't have intelligence operatives handing me envelopes of money. I don't have any money. Oddly enough, you know, people think, you know, romantically about, oh, this guy lives in France. Ooh, isn't that nice? I live in a 300-year-old farmhouse, and my wife and I work very hard at just keeping our food on the table and going. This is what we do. Now, I don't begrudge that because, in fact, my life has never been better than it's been working on the land and digging up potatoes and digging and bringing in tomatoes and fresh food from a garden and doing chores around my home. This is the kind of thing that I think are really valuable in life, things that we've moved away from. You know, this gal that I had told you visited my home, she was so proud of this new telephone that had a TV screen on it, and she wanted me to see all the stuff it could do. And I looked at it, and I couldn't believe how unimportant and insignificant this stupid phone that she was so proud of was. It was a nonsense. I mean, I don't own a cell phone, ladies and gentlemen. I don't want one. Now, that doesn't mean I haven't used one. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, I was using a cell phone back in the 1980s. 1983, 84, I was using a cell phone. So, I mean, they've been around a long time, but I got rid of mine 15 years ago. No, 12 years ago now. Got rid of it. It's a foolishness. It's full of radiation, and if you put it up to your ear, you're going to have what we already know from Swedish studies. You're going to get brain tumors and every other problem from this, not to mention the newer telephones can track you. So, don't need them. However, as a communication tool, you know, you might want to keep one for security reasons for your wife if she's driving out at night or she's coming home on a bus at night and to keep safe. She can call for help or something like that. You know, I think that's important, and I recommend it for women to have when they're out. But I personally don't want one, you know. But the Internet now, this guy Ron Francis coming on in a short time here, he has used technology to get this message out. He's used grassroots organization. He's asked people to take signatures out in the communities. He's from Somerville, Massachusetts, and Cambridge, Mass. And he got people to sign these things, and he finally got the question on the ballot. And wait till you hear what he's got to say. It's remarkable. It really is. He'll be coming on in about 4 minutes, and I can't wait to have him describe his efforts, because I think these efforts can be repeated. We need to take a page from Ron's book, in figuratively speaking here. We need to take a page from his system of grassroots organizing, and I want to really have him go into how he got that to happen, because this remarkable. You know, it's hard to get people in America to do anything. I'm going to be shocked to hear how he was able to get these folks in Somerville and Cambridge to work so hard for a goal. So I'm going to have my engineer give him a call right now. It looks like the time we should be getting in touch with him, and then maybe we can bring him up. Hopefully he'll be available, and if not, we have one other phone number I can give my engineer to try and find him. He gave me two numbers to call him at. I gave my engineer one of them. So, you know, the French Connection tries to fight for a lot of causes here, but all of them are around the central theme of that we have a single group committing terrible and vicious crimes worldwide, and they use deception to get away with it. And that is the repeated story no matter what realm we talk about, medical, environmental, legal, governmental, military. It doesn't matter what area. It's always the same story. There's deception involved, and there's a crime gang involved. And it always goes back to these same people. And it's a big job we face. You know, we're fighting the synagogue of Satan here, ladies and gentlemen. It's a term coined by Christ, and he was correct when he identified this group as the synagogue of Satan, and which leads me to a book that was written by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock called The Synagogue of Satan, about the timeline of the Rothschilds. You should look it up on the internet and order it. It is a very important book for you to understand how this world got into such a mess. I was instrumental in giving him information early on to put together a timeline for the Rothschilds. And this man was so successful at putting that together, he turned it into a book, which is fantastic. I think to date, 20 or 30,000 copies have been sold and growing. It's been translated into several languages. It's a remarkable piece of work, and anybody out there who hasn't read The Synagogue of Satan by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock should get their hands on it. You can get it on Amazon, or you can go to TexMar's website, The Prophecy, what is it now? I forget anyway. Tex Mars. I'm going to try to have Tex. He's a minister in America who knows about this crime gang's activities, and we're going to try to bring him on. I've always admired Mars' honesty. I think we must have our guest here. Ron Francis, are you with me?
Hello, Daryl.
Yes, Ron, are you there?
I am, but I'm in a place where I really can't... I'm going to ask you to speak to Bob Cagle, who's another representative of our organization in Somerville.
Yes, now where is he?
He's in Somerville.
Is he on that second number you gave me?
Yes, he is. And he's ready to go.
Okay, let me call. Let me give this number privately to my engineer so he can call him, and then we'll get him on. No, we tried. We've tried several times to get this stuff done. Let me get back to what I was saying before. We're going to invite Ron and his organization back. You can go to his website and do some investigating here. Let me go to where it is. It's called the Somerville Divestment Project, and it's full of great information about grassroots organizing and about information about Palestinian organizations. And what one thing that was very surprising to me, and I was very happy to see, is that a lot of Israelis are helping with the organization of this group. You know, there are many Israelis who do not agree with what their government has done, and they are waking up. Now, again, the majority of Israelis is not aware, or if they are, they're not courageous enough to stop it, or they're not interested in stopping it, but there are many out there who are. So when people think that all Jews are involved in the crimes, they're not. Many of them are not interested in being sick, amoral human beings. They're interested in kindness and the rest. So we need to be very careful about describing an entire people as bad, because many of them aren't. But that's not to say that there is not a majority of crooks and criminals holding sway in Israel, as we find in many places. So, but anyway, let's get back to the food situation in our and the like. We need oils. We need to buy vegetable oils for frying and for... We need oil in our diet. We need olive oils because those are wonderful to take in their natural form with vinegars and everything for salad dressings and the rest. But we need oils. We need beans. We need rices. We need sorghums. We need... If you have a different cultural diet, make sure you buy enough supply of those extra foods in your home. If you need heat during the winter time, which is coming up in about 5 or 6 months for South Africa and for parts of Pan Africa, you need to start earmarking a budget for that immediately and have that in reserve, because in 6 months the financial system may be in such a bad state that the money you have in your pocket doesn't buy you oil for heat, or doesn't buy you kerosene for heat, or can't pay your electric bill, so you may need a wood stove or other items. Batteries for emergencies, a toilet paper for your family so that you can remain hygienic and clean. All of these things that you use on a daily basis need to be considered now. This is important stuff. Especially for the listening audience in Europe and America who are watching these financial messes on their television screens. How bad is it going to get? Well, as bad as your imagination can conjure in your head. Very bad. So the idea that you're going to be able to go out in a few months and buy the things that you want off the grocery shelf is probably a falsehood, and you should not rely on it. Now, if, for some reason, a miracle is given to us people down at the bottom here, and we still have a food being delivered and all the rest, the things that you buy right now you can still use. You know, rice does not go bad. Pasta does not go bad. Oils can last over a year. So the insurance that you're using them to buy now can always be used. They won't go to waste. The bottom line here is be prepared. You know, and I also say to American audiences and to the Europeans, if your local government permits you to have a firearm in your home, whatever kind of firearm they permit, look into the idea of having one. Now, if you're not familiar with firearm use, become familiar. That means if you need safety requirements, then by all means, be as safe as possible. Do not break the law to have these things, because basically you'll be setting yourself up for the government to arrest you. We don't want this either. And what you need to do basically, ladies and gentlemen, is have the means to protect your family, protect yourself. Because, face it, In a town like my hometown in the United States, with about 15,000 to 17,000 people, there are 30 policemen on the force. That means at any given time there's 8 of them in this community. If people are stealing from one another for food and problems are erupting in the streets, those policemen are not going to be there to save you from a problem. The only way you're going to be saved is going to be on your own actions, or the actions of people in your family or people in your neighborhood. So it's time for you to start networking with neighbors. It's time to, as I said, begin to tell other people in your work environment, if you still have a job, or in your immediate environment, that that these are the facts and this is what you see coming, and that the financial system is not long for this world, that the problems from this implosion are going to translate into suffering at the bottom for everyone. And you know, many people think that this whole implosion, guys, is sort of a mistake. It's sort of it just happened because of excesses. Well, no, it did not. It happened by design. It happened like the 1929 crash happened by design. It happened like all of these implosions have happened over the last 150, 200 years by design. And the result of this is, for the criminals, is an opportunity for them to be buying up valuable assets in the world for next to nothing, so that they don't only control 70-80% of industries, but they control 100% of these industries. You'll notice that they are using these same funds to buy other banks. Now, these are banks that may or may not have been dependent on the Zionist banking cartel. They're failing, and they're being folded in to Zionist banks. Now, banks such as Santander Bank is a criminal Zionist bank. Banks like Lloyd's TSB, or of course the Rothschild banks of BNP Paribas, and you can see in Britain many of the banks that that are surviving this. You can take a look at them and who's running them. What we need to know is that many of the banks are being financed to buy up other banks so that we have a very small number of banks controlling all commerce in the world. That means investment commerce, that means loans, that means everything. And when they introduce their new currency, which the dollar will be lost to the world after its 200-year history, it will be gone. What we will have in its place, ladies and gentlemen, is a world currency where you are given your financial credits through the, one of these Zionist-controlled banks. And you can bet that if you're out of favor with these criminals, you will not be getting any money in your bank account. You will not be buying food in the marketplace. Many people have talked about being forced to have a chip in their body so that they can prove who they are, and that will give access to their bank system. These have been talked about in modern documents in the United States where they are talking about using this. But you'll also see it talked about in the Bible as the mark of the beast. Now, many people believe it was described 2,000 years ago that this criminal group was going to inflict this upon us, and that 2,000 years ago these facts were known. You know, there's a lot of evidence that that this is true. So I don't know, sitting from where I perch myself every day and reading the things that I read, I don't see how anyone can do this alone. This is important. How anyone can possibly consider that they could be independent in these times. You know, we are human beings. We are a family. Regardless of your faith, regardless of all these barriers that have been artificially placed between our groups, if you take a look at all of us, we love our children. We love our wives and husbands. We love our families, our extended families. We care about our communities. We want the best for our children's education. We want to eat well. We want to laugh. We want to share warm histories and stories with one another. These are universal truths of humanity, but the biggest one we want is we want to be free. Human beings strive to be free. And the fact is, ladies and gentlemen, is we're losing all of those things to this crime gang. And what I brought up in the last show with Anayat Wadi is important to understand. This, one of the main ways they've done that is by corrupting our morals through things like pornography and drugs and destroying the relationship between generations. Young people no longer talk to an older generation. They don't trust them. They don't share stories anymore. They're not close to one another. And the other way they do it is through social destruction through multiculturalism. Now, for a South African audience to think that multiculturalism is a good thing, and that they've sold you that idea. See, as soon as you start identifying yourself with I'm a Muslim South African or this or that, once you've delineated who you are, all of a sudden you are fixed in a single group. Simple truth is we're all human beings and we're part of the human family. Now, granted, we have cultural differences between one another, but that's what makes our human family rich. This is the real wealth that we have. And see, what they're trying to do is make you segregated within your group so that later they can say, well, the black South Africans hate the Muslim South Africans, hate the Indian South Africans, hate the white South Africans, and they want you to play off against each other all of these hatreds and all of these problems so that you are never unified. so that there are always skirmishes between groups. They're fractionalizing the human family so that there is no cohesion. And what we need to do, ladies and gentlemen, is come together as a single people. We all have those values I described together. And we all want to be free together. And I can tell you there's nothing I enjoy more as a person raised in an American culture in a predominantly Caucasian culture, but nothing I enjoy more than visiting or having friendships in other cultures and experiencing their food or their traditions. Or these are the best parts of being human. And I don't have to do it by saying I'm a white American. I'm an American. I'm a human being. I'm a person who has interesting things to show others as well. But don't buy into this stuff like they've sold in America where first you were an African and then you're an African American, then you're black and then you're this and that, and you're never a cohesive part of any group. You're a separate part. You're a Latino American. You're an Arab American. And they play you off against other groups. You can see it in the press. They ask these stupid questions in the press as do Arab Americans think Obama is going to be helpful? Who cares? Of course he's not going to be, but I mean the question should be, do Americans think he's going to be helpful? Yes, they think he is, but he's not going to be. I hope you understand my point. I think I could probably develop an entire hour show on that one point, so that we could start understanding how dangerous this putting and pushing people into groups is. It's dangerous, and it keeps us apart. You know, if I have ever known for one important thing other than fighting Zionism, the second thing I'd like to be known for is bringing people together from different religions, different backgrounds, under one banner of human banner, human family, that has goals and interests that we all share as a single family. This is important to me. And that includes the Jews out there who are fighting a righteous fight as well, and there are a lot of them. And they deserve a seat at the table as well if they're going to act responsibly and righteously, which many of them are, and many of them have. And I think they have to start working a little harder out there to expose the people in their own community so that they do not end up blamed as a group entirely, and that we can have people like myself always pointing out the fact that not every single Jew is involved in these crimes, or not every single Christian Zionist is guilty of supporting criminal Zionism or so forth. Yeah. We're getting toward the end of my 3 hours of broadcasting. I'm getting tired. I've always suffered with health issues, and today is no different. I get tired from these efforts, not to mention emotionally drained. That's one of the hardest things to combat, ladies and gentlemen, is knowing that difficult things are coming for people. And as you do the research, you'll have to come to these truths as well. And that the toll that truth takes upon you, because it is omnipresent. So remember that there are needs in all of us to find joy in our world, to have outlets for these painful ideas that we have to think about, you know, these difficult decisions we have to make. You need to have good times to laugh and to maybe to read something interesting or a book, something that takes your mind away from some of these horrors, and you need to spend time with children, and the most important is to reach down and help people who are less fortunate than you, because when you do that, it will put your own life in perspective. It is the perspective of helping others that is the most important when we're trying to ameliorate the sadness that some of these events are taking on our lives. You know, get out of your own head and start putting yourself in the service of others. And when you do that, your problems seem to vanish, and a human pride begins to develop inside yourself that, you know, we as a family can reach down and help each other out. This is important stuff. Yeah. I get my greatest joys from helping people in my extended family and in my community. You know, there are old people who can't do for themselves these days. You know, we're living longer than ever here in France, at least, and there are a lot of 70-year-old, 80-year-old people in my area who are relying on a fixed pension to survive, and they don't have enough money to eat. Now, we've got hunger and destitution starting to erupt in elderly people in France and in America. So what you need to do is look around, and if you know where there's an elderly person, maybe stop by and find out if they need help. See if they could use a delivery of some rice or some potatoes or something, maybe a, you know, some heating oil or something, whatever it is that they could use, and see if you can't get it for them or help them get it. You know, give it to them yourself if you've got extra. And the last thing I want to bring up tonight is supporting the French Connection. Now, you know, people have been generous to me to pay phone bills, to pay. I just had my computer over here. I had a burn down here on something. I think they attacked me and something went, and I had to get that fixed, and it cost me. And I have internet contracts that are going to be renewed in 30 days coming up, and all of this stuff. On top of that, I'm struggling at the borders of solvency in my own right, and I do appreciate it when people help me. If the South African audience or the people in Europe or the people in America can spare a dollar or 5 euros or 50 or a rand or whatever it is that you can afford to help the French Connection, it's important. Because what I would like to have as well is start a small fund for legal defense. Because at some point, I believe the French government is going to place me in probably an under arrest of some sort because of the things that I am working so hard to stop for in the world. They're going to try and stop me. I'm sure of it. And I would love to have an attorney to call. I really think that that's important for me. And so I've always hoped that I could do that, and I've never had enough money to do it. It's never added up to an amount of money that would be able to even approach somebody and say, look, in the event that I'm taken in, would you be able to represent me so I don't have to stay there? Oftentimes it's hard to do things to people when they've got a lawyer working for them. So that's something I've considered. And I sure could use your help on some of these things, you know, but I don't want to belabor that too much because it's hard for me to go hat in hand to the audience and ask for help often. It really is. I often think I should be able to do all of this on my own, and foolishly, that's not true. I can't do it on my own. It's too big of a job. This is a huge responsibility we all have to do this together. So, please. Consider it, and giving us a hand here, giving me a hand. Consider the things I've said over the last 3 hours, please. And until the next time, which will be on Tuesday of next week, we will have Ron Francis or one of his representatives from his organization on to speak to you about their grassroots organization. Till the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please, be well. CII.